From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Joel Mertzel developed a new kind of butter dish, and I know what you're thinking. How is it possible that there is a new kind of butter dish? But don't worry, we'll get to it. Anyway, it's called Buttery, and before pouring tons of money into making this thing, she of course wanted to know something really important.
And so the million-dollar question is, will people buy this product? And that's what I needed the answer to.
So she approached a market research firm and said, hey, can you find out if this thing is something people will buy? And they said, sure, that'll cost you $10,000. And that wasn't money Joelle was willing to spend. But instead of quitting right there, she had another idea.
Well, when I spoke to this market research firm and they quoted me $10,000, I pressed on them to find out what exactly they were doing for $10,000. And they had told me that they would conduct focus groups and do surveys.
And so Joelle thought, you know what? I can do that myself. Now, let me just pause for a second. This right here is an example of the first test for an entrepreneur. It is the first hurdle, the first time an entrepreneur must grapple with exactly what it'll take to turn their idea into action, the first time that they'll see exactly how resilient they are. Because, yeah, coming up with a great product or service or company requires some smarts, but the real trick is in the execution. That's what separates the successful from the also-rans, and it starts with early moments like Joelle's. So today we're going to do something different on Problem Solvers. Usually, every episode is devoted to one story of an entrepreneur overcoming a problem, and we follow how that solution radiates outward, often changing an entrepreneur's entire business and philosophy. But today, I want to focus in on that small first moment, that first challenge, that first solution. Small and sometimes simple as it may be, these first moments contain so much ingenuity and inspiration. And so today we're going to indulge in that. We're going to explore it. Coming up, we have three stories of problems solved at the very, very beginning. First, we hear how Joelle created the most ingenious market research I've ever heard. Then we'll hear how GrowSumo figured out how to target only the customers most willing to make a purchase. And finally, how a little clothing company called American Rhino moved faster than its competition. But first, before we get to all these stories of firsts, let's take a short break and hear from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm John Taffer. I've been in business for over 30 years, and in those 30 years, I've done educational programs all over the world and have thousands of people that have attended my seminars. I've received letters from them saying how I've impacted their life. And when I started Bar Rescue, I realized that I can impact people all over the country through my television show. And it really inspired me and taught me that I can change people's lives. That's why I wrote my new book, Don't Bullshit Yourself. It'll really change your life and help break down the excuses that are holding you back. So pre-order my book, Don't Bullshit Yourself, today by going to my website, johntaffer.com/books. Again, johntaffer.com/books. You'll be glad you did.
And now our second sponsor. Can flushing the toilet light up your house? It's the kind of thing discussed on Waterline, a new podcast about the economic, political, social, behavioral, technological, and environmental aspects of water around the globe, as well as the latest scientific advancements and technical solutions to create efficient water usage and make water safe for everyone. Waterline Podcast is an initiative of Israel New Tech, a part of the Israeli Ministry of Economy and Industry. And I'd recommend starting with their episode on drip irrigation, an agricultural innovation that proves everything can continue to be improved upon. Search Waterline Podcast on iTunes or in your Android podcast app. All right, so let's start by picking back up with Joelle's story. As I promised, you'd come to understand how someone could possibly come up with a new kind of butter dish. And here it is.
I had recently learned that you don't need to refrigerate butter, which is awesome because then your butter is always soft and spreadable. But when I started using a traditional two-piece butter dish, I found that they were really messy and inconvenient.
Which makes sense. You lift the top of the dish, accidentally bump it into this soft butter, and now you've got a mess. So Joelle figures that if she puts the top on a hinge so it flips up and down in a predictable way, she'd solve the problem. But is this a problem for lots of people? Like, are people not refrigerating their butter?
And so I created a survey, and I took it around just locally to my kids' school, to the park, to the mall. and ask people, you know, to answer those questions.
Yes, she discovers they like unrefrigerated butter and they like her idea for the hinge. She spends a while making prototypes, and this is when she goes to the market research firm, because now she has bigger questions like what should she charge for it and what colors should she make it in and all the important manufacturing details she need to make this a success. And now we get to the place where we started with this story. She goes to the market research firm. They quote her $10,000. She asks what they do. They say focus groups and surveys, and she decides to do that herself, which, hey, simple enough, right? You just go out and talk to people. But if you have ever tried surveying people as they go about their day, you know it is not easy. People have better things to do than to talk to you, and Joelle would, like, go to people in the park, and they'd shoo her away, and this is why people pay $10,000, just to not have to do this. Surveying people is a pain. But Joelle is persistent. And one day she's at the airport waiting to board a flight, and she has a revelation.
As I'm sitting there at the gate waiting to board my plane, I look around and I'm like, look at all these people here. They're not doing anything. I was like, let me just ask them. And so that ended up being like the jackpot. And I realized the airport is the number one place to do market research. First of all, you've got this captive audience. You've got people who are sitting there literally doing nothing, just waiting to get on a plane. And so they're happy to answer your questions because you're not really an intrusion.
The airport. Nobody thinks of the airport as a place to do business. It's just a place where you head to or from business. But it's actually the perfect place to do DIY market research. I mean, if she had gone to the park or the mall or whatever, she'd only be reaching people who live in her area. But the airport gives her a national perspective. It has everyone. And Joelle had a bunch of flights scheduled that year, so she just started arriving at the airport like 5 hours early for each flight so that she'd have plenty of time to go around surveying. She wouldn't identify herself as the inventor, of course, because then people would give her their, oh, it's nice. You know, they're going to try to play it nice and soft. She learned that you have to just go and present yourself as the surveyor. And she just was, you know, looking for information, coming up and looking for information. And you can do this pretty much infinitely. By the time you get from gate one to four, the people in gate one have boarded and there's an entirely new batch of people just sitting around.
And surprisingly, I never got in trouble. Nobody ever asked me to leave. You know, it wasn't like I wasn't allowed to do it. And it's not like I went up to security and asked. I just did it. And speaking of security, though, so the other trick, too, is you have to get through security. You have to be in the gate area. So to anyone who's listening to this, if they're, you know, planning on doing their research this way, if you don't have any, like, bona fide travel plans and you want to do some research, you can just buy, like, a one-way ticket, you know, that's inexpensive to whatever, you know, is most, you know, closest to your airport. So that way you can get through security. And then just spend all day there as long as you want, doing as much research as you want.
I love what she just said there. Was this against the rules? I don't know. Maybe. But entrepreneurs don't go around asking for permission. You don't see an opportunity and say, oh, can I do this? No, you just take it. You play by your own rules. And that's how Joelle learned everything she needed to know to launch Buttery and saved $10,000 in the process. Okay. Story number two comes to us from this guy.
My name is Bryn Jones. I'm the co-founder and CEO of GrowSumo.
GrowSumo is a B2B company. It provides a platform for companies to manage relationships with their partners like resellers and affiliates. And when they launched in 2015, they became the third most popular on the site Product Hunt, which is a huge boost for any company and particularly rare for a very niche enterprise software like GrowSumo. And that led to a lot of early momentum and lots and lots of companies signing up, which at first Bryn and his team were feeling really great about. It was like especially impressive because this was not cheap. I mean, GrowSumo offered a 14-day free trial and then started billing at $300 a month. And here they came. But the excitement at GrowSumo was short-lived because most of those new customers bailed the minute they actually had to start paying.
It would be almost immediate. It would say like, oh, I'm not ready to make this buying decision. You know, can you refund me the money and we'll come back to you when we're ready. And so a lot of our time was spent, you know, refunding money immediately after the trial, trying to service the account, and really not delivering value.
So now GrowSumo is looking at a very different story. They have a lot of attention and a lot of signups, but far fewer signups turning into long-term customers. And this may sound alarming, but at first GrowSumo is just Bryn and his co-founder, and they're like, fine, whatever. We are getting customers. We are making money. It's just like searching for gold, right? You've got to put a lot of mud into the sifter. But as GrowSumo grew and expanded its staff, that no longer seemed like an efficient way of doing business.
But it was when we hired more people to come onto the team was when we realized, hey, you know, we shouldn't be wasting our time with people that ultimately will never make a buying decision or even use our platform. We should be targeting people that will use our platform.
So how do you do that? They decided to start by categorizing their customers. At the start, they just saw every business as a potential customer, but now it was time to really look at who was buying and why.
We just used an old-fashioned whiteboard. We looked at the data that we had from beginning of 2017.
And then they put everyone who signed up into buckets, basically. Who are the customers that sign up and then back out? Who signs up and stays? And then what data points can they pull out of both of those categories? For example, how long from start to finish, from the time a salesperson contacts the potential client to the time they become a client, how long did that take? And is it different per type of customer? Then the GrowSumo team started calling those customers to confirm what the data showed. They'd ask, what exactly do you use GrowSumo for? And why didn't you use GrowSumo? Why did you? And why did it take you so much time to actually decide to buy?
And after that, we categorized everybody and said, hey, we are only going to target companies that do X. This is how much time we are going to put into it. Their buying decision should, at an early stage company, be less than 7 days. At our second stage company, the Asanas of the world, their buying decision could be up to 21 days. And then at a late stage company, their buying decision could likely be about 2 months. If anybody falls outside of the scope of this, we shouldn't be targeting them.
As in, let's stop wasting our time chasing leads that, as our data shows, will not turn into actual customers. So now when some company contacts GrowSumo and it falls out of the range of GrowSumo's usual customers, a salesperson does not sign them up. Instead, they talk through whether GrowSumo is actually right for this customer, because oftentimes it isn't. And now everyone has saved time, and GrowSumo's sales reps can focus on the leads that may actually turn into sales.
Our account reps, the average contract value that they generate has tripled on a monthly basis.
That's a pretty great return for just a little time gathered around a whiteboard. Okay, one more story, and this one involves some travel.
My name is Chris Wells, and I'm the president of American Rhino.
Chris lives in Massachusetts and worked in recruiting, and 10 years ago had taken a family vacation to Kenya. He and his family then became close with the host family they stayed with, and they decided to come back and join this fundraising road race that's done out there to raise money for rhino conservation. They loved it so much that they kept coming back and have since done it 5 times and raised over $200,000. And this is what ultimately inspired Chris to create an apparel brand called American Rhino, which would also help raise money for rhinos. And he wanted to make the apparel out of a local type of colorful cotton called kakoi. But of course, he doesn't know anything about the apparel industry, so he starts asking around, and he does not like what he's hearing.
Most people talk about how to make apparel, it's a 12 to 18 to 24 month window. And I said, I'm not going to be that patient. We wanted to turn it around in 8 to 10 weeks.
8 to 10 weeks. And that's for an apparel brand made with fabric from half a world away. So how is he going to do this? In January of 2017, he goes knocking on doors in Kenya and finally finds a kakoi manufacturer who has 3 phones up to his ear and does not take this American guy very seriously at first. And he just sends Chris away. But Chris comes back a second time, and now the guy only has 1 phone to his ear and is willing to take Chris a little more seriously. And so they work something out, and he checks out the fabric, and then Chris wires money to the factory, and $500 later walks away with 5 rolls of kakoi, which Chris takes back home to Massachusetts and finds some clothing designers, and he gives them the kakoi and says, just experiment with it. Make stuff. Pants, shorts, dresses, whatever. Let's find what works best with kakoi.
We watched it, and we did a lot of quality control, and we did that all within 3 weeks. And we turned out that we could do some different things with it. So then we went back to Kenya and said, let's find factories in Kenya to make it there. So again, that was the whole education of who will do business with us. Are they good factories? Are they going to pay a reasonable wage? Are they treating their employees the right way? And I just started knocking out a lot of doors.
Boom, boom, boom. This guy's not wasting any time. Get me the fabric. Get me some designs. Get me a manufacturer. Then Chris discovers a free trade agreement between Africa and America, where if a factory is certified and all the materials it's working with have come from Africa, then it can be shipped into the States duty free. So the marathon continues. He contacts the Kenyan government and gets the factories he's working with to be certified, and then he finds an exporter who had never shipped to America before but was willing to move fast and send things by air so everything would arrive in a week. And all of this sounds like it could be haphazard. Like, why do other apparel companies tell Chris it could take 18 to 24 months? Probably because they're like perfecting the product. They're just tinkering and working and refining. But Chris has a really different, valuable perspective on this.
I think anybody, when you start to commit your own funds to things, would like to see a return sooner than later. And a lot of the fabrics are going to be more summer oriented. And instead of waiting until next June, we thought it was important to start it this year, start to prove the concept and see how the consumers were going to receive it.
Test the concept. Chris isn't thinking about this first line as his first and only line. He wants to float his idea out there in the real world and learn from it. He's avoiding analysis paralysis, where someone would just sit on the sidelines tinkering forever. Chris just wants to get something out into the world, let people see it, touch it, wear it, tell him what he likes and doesn't like. The release of the product is just part of the process, not the end of it. And that's what happened since, really. He's made dresses, pants, shorts, towels, bags, baskets, and more. He's done e-commerce and pop-up stores. Some stuff sold great, some less so. He's figuring out a price point, and he's discovering that education is really one of his biggest challenges, because he needs to get people to understand what Kakoi is and to appreciate the story behind it. Because once he's done that, he's got them hooked.
The folks, and we track all of our sales, who have bought it once, we've had many repeat sales. So that's encouraging to me. It's just getting people to buy it for the first time.
So taken together, what do these three stories tell us? The biggest takeaway for me is that entrepreneurs must take action. In all three of these stories, an early speed bump could have totally shut down an idea or a company. Can't afford market research, can't find the right customers, can't wait 2 years to make an apparel brand. But all three of these entrepreneurs said, you know what? I'm going to figure this out myself. I'm just going to do, to keep doing, to learn along the way and use that to improve and grow and do what I have set out to do. That is a good precedent to set early. From the moment an entrepreneur's journey starts, they know nothing is going to stop them. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonpfeiffer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N, F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Pfeiffer 5, which is 5 monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonpfeiffer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.